Knock the beast down with gentle finality. Not yet. He would not give in just yet. He wanted to see what this child of the wolf would grow into.
Pobrecita, he said to her tenderly. Not you.
He lifted her to her feet.
You I am not angry with.
She pressed her unwounded side desperately tight to his leg. She was shaking and panting in fear. Not of him, he hoped.
It is all right now, he told her. You are safe.
One of the wolves lunged to his feet, snarling. She flinched, and Azeel drove him back down to the snow-covered ground with his gaze. The man beneath the wolf's pelt might want to attack, but his wolf was outclassed and knew it. As long as they were in their wolf forms, they could not attack him. Azeel glanced at Kara, who was fair game, though he thought that she would not be vulnerable for long. She had a backbone, that girl. He thought of the way she'd gotten between him and the other wolves, because she mistakenly assumed that because he was in his human form, he might be outgunned. No, she was born to be a protector. She just needed to grow up. For now, though, it was for him to protect her. So he did to the strangers what he had not done to Kara, and used his power to drag them into their human bodies. The change would hurt. A lot. And then they would get cold on the walk to his car. He did not care at all about their sufferings.
I do. I want to see them suffer, said his darker self.
While the wolves who had thought they could hunt on the Morok's land changed, Azeel checked Kara's wound, and she licked anxiously at his fingers. Her fur was caked with blood, but beneath the gore, her skin had already sealed.
You'll be fine, he told her, ruffling the hair on the top of her head. You did well to call to me and to lead them here. I am sorry I could not kill them for you, but they will be suitably punished.
Bran would probably not kill them unless they had been trouble before, but that there were three of them made Azeel wonder who their alpha was and why he'd allowed them to hunt today and in this place. There was no way any kind of competent alpha would not feel a hunt as chaotic as these idiots' hunt had been through the pack bonds. Perhaps their alpha had sent them. Azeel considered the wolves who were nearing their human forms. The one he thought he'd recognized was the wolf he'd seen outside Bran's office, Eric, who had already disobeyed Bran by not staying away from Bran's house until after the great day of change was over. Who would gain from such a brash breaking of Bran's rules? Who would gain from Kara's being harmed while she was under the Morok's protection? He did not know, because he had kept himself ignorant. He had been self-indulgent and lazy, or maybe he would have seen this coming and spared Kara the fright.
Not your problem, Azeel told himself fiercely under the sting of guilt.
It was not self-indulgence, because he had come here to set down his responsibilities and die with honor. He was not an alpha here. He'd tended to such matters for long enough. Here, his duty was clear. He would take them and take Kara to his alpha. Once delivered, he was done. Speaking of his alpha, he took his cell phone out of its holster and called Bran.
Azeel?
I am standing in the middle of the forest where three of our werewolf guests had decided that hunting our Kara would bring them some benefit, he said.
They are still alive?
If they were not, I would be hunting my next victim instead of calling you, he said.
You sell yourself short, Bran told Azeel,
but his voice was distracted. That argument was an old one. Azeel did not make the mistake of thinking that Bran's calmness meant he did not care that these wolves had trespassed. People died when Bran was at his most reasonable. Some of them died horribly. All of them idiots.
I assume that Kara is all right, Bran said. If not, I would be getting reports about a werewolf who had killed every living thing in Aspen Creek and was heading next for Troy.
Someone listening might think that Bran was being facetious or even mocking, and they might be right. But it was himself he was mocking, not Azeel. They both knew that Bran had been that monster.
Probably, agreed Azeel. But I would be a much better monster than you were,
There would be no stories about my reign of terror because no one would live to tell the tale.
Black humor took the sting out of the truth, but did not obscure it. And Azeel knew the stories came later, because the monster who had once ruled Bran's body had not left victims alive either. Bran had come back. And the reason for that was the reason why Bran Cornick was Azeel's alpha and not the other way around.
"They're almost done," Azeel told him.
"Done?"
"I made them change back to human. That way none of them will be able to hurt Kara when my back is turned. It'll take us 15 minutes or so to get to my house, and another 15 to take them to you."
"Don't make it too easy on them," Bran said.
Azeel smiled at the first of Kara's attackers who was trying to stand up.
"I won't. You have my word."
"See you in half an hour," Bran said, and hung up.
Azeel made the other wolves sit in the truck bed. If they had really been human, he'd have been risking their lives by making them stay out naked in the cold for so long. But werewolves can't be killed by a little cold.
"It isn't that cold," he told Kara when she whined in concern while her attackers climbed in. "They are tough. If they are tough enough to pick on little girls," he looked at them, and they turned their heads away, "then they are tough enough to ride in the back."
To them, he said,
"You stay there until we get where we are going. If you jump, I will back up and run over you until you are too broken to heal, and leave you for someone who cares to pick you up. It might take a while."
They heard the truth in his words, and he saw their submission. They would stay where he'd put them, which disappointed him. He could have run them over with his truck without disturbing his wolf. He would have enjoyed it. He opened the driver's side door and gestured to Kara. She leaped in gracefully, the only evidence left of the wound the mess the blood had made of her fur. He drove to the Maroc's house, following four other cars and a truck doing the same thing. The Maroc had summoned the wolves. Because he knew where the only place big enough to house everyone was, Azeel drove past the house and took the back road that allowed him to drive all the way to the pole barn. The truck in front of them did the same thing, and there were more trucks and SUVs parked at the barn, pack members. The pole barn had been built about 30 years ago, because the Maroc did not like changing people in the school auditorium.
"Too much blood and misery," he'd said. "I am old enough to believe it leaves a mark on a place."
Azeel agreed. Bran leaned against the outside wall of the pole barn as Azeel drove up. He met Azeel's eyes through the windshield and pointed to the empty space in front of him, right next to the entrance. So Azeel pulled in and parked. Bran looked considerably less dangerous than Charles, the huge, blank-faced man who stood alertly beside him. Not for the first time, Azeel thought that it had served Bran well to have a son who oozed threat like a Twinkie oozed plasticky cream filling. Everyone looked at Bran's son Charles and forgot who the most dangerous person was. Azeel got out and held open the door for Kara. She jumped down beside him and gave Charles a wary look. Bran's son was too busy taking in the shivering and naked men in the truck bed to notice. He threw them each a pair of sweat bottoms, which Azeel hadn't noticed him holding.
"Get dressed," Charles rumbled at them.
Once they were clothed, if only a little, Bran's son took charge of herding them inside. Once they were gone, Bran looked at Kara, who shrank under his gaze.
"It would have been better," Bran said grimly, "if we hadn't handed ammunition to our enemies. I'm afraid I'm as much at fault as you are, Azeel, but it is Kara they want to pay."
Azeel frowned. Surely it should be the wolves who attacked Kara who would pay.
"Explain that," he said.
Then, because he remembered that he wasn't Alpha anymore,
"Please. I don't pay attention to politics anymore," he told Bran half apologetically. "That's your job."
"Yeah," Bran said. "Well, my job sucks."
He knelt and slid his hand along Kara's jaw. Helplessly, her tail wagged her body, her wolf delighted by his attention.
"You are mine, darling. I'll keep you safe."
Bran's idea of safe, which paralleled Azeel's own, sometimes meant dead. Azeel quit breathing for a moment.
Azeel thought back over what he and Bran had done to imperil Kara. The last interaction had been in Bran's study. He glanced at the door where the miscreant wolves had gone, preceding them into the pole barn. Eric of the We Attack Children pack had been waiting just outside that study door when Azeel and Bran had spoken of how long Kara had been a wolf. She'd been a wolf for 3 years, and had yet to be in control of her change. That werewolves have 1 year to prove themselves or they have to be killed was a hard and necessary law. It required people to kill their loved ones to preserve the rest of the wolves. They were willing to do so only because that law applied to all of them. If Bran made an exception for Kara, it would spell decades of resentment and rebellion. If he did not make an exception for Kara, then Azeel and Bran would have that battle that Azeel came here for. It was oddly stupid of them to hunt Kara so loudly where there were wolves to hear. It was odd that they had done so little damage to her. What if it had not been stupidity? Or rather, it had been stupidity on a much grander scale. What if someone had wanted this meeting, wanted to push the issue of Kara out into the open? Azeel's eyes met Bran's, letting Bran know that Azeel understood the issue and that he would not allow Kara to be harmed without a protest. If Bran upheld the law, the battle that Azeel had been seeking almost 16 years ago when he'd first come here would take place.
"Whom do they belong to?" Azeel asked.
"Hatchard Cole, a wolf who wants to expand his territory to include all of Alaska. He'd gladly take care of Liam Oldham and Ibrahim Ward. All he needs is my endorsement. If I don't give it, he might just present me with a fait accompli."
"Ah," said Azeel. "Is he here? And is he still alive after a blackmail attempt like that?"
"No," Bran said sourly. "He gave the orders and left his wolves to spin in the wind when it didn't work. When I called to inform him of the trespass after you called me, he commented about privileged wolves who do not follow the rules. I'm sure he'll get some unsuspecting wolf all hot and bothered about it. Someone who had to put a brother, mother, sister to rest when they couldn't control themselves within the allotted time."
"He wants your position," Azeel said, "Hatchard Cole."
He took a deep breath and thought about the werewolves he knew who were powerful enough to think they could take on Bran.
"Was he perhaps once Conrad Hatch? I met him about 300 years ago, give or take a few decades. Decent man, I thought then."
Bran nodded. "That's him. He hasn't left Alaska since the 1880s. I've let him be, and until now he has given me no reason to complain."
"Dominant wolves who do not live under your thumb forget why they swore obedience to you," Azeel said. "They become arrogant, and most of them do not like that you have brought us out into the eyes of the public. They are stuck in old habits, and change frightens them."
Bran smiled, a flash, then gone.
"They?" "I'm beyond that," Azeel said aloofly. "Now I'm just bored. He thinks that being Marok is like being Alpha. If he can just knock you off your pedestal, make you look weak, it will reduce your support, weaken your magic." He snorted. "Idiot."
Kara gave him an anxious whine.
"It will be okay," he told her, his voice confident.
Bran would hear the lie, but she wouldn't, and that was all he cared about. To Bran he said,
"I will stand with her."
"Then go find Charles. He'll be in the center of the floor with the 3 Alaskan wolves. I will come in when everyone is here."
Kara beside him, Azeel pushed his way through a group of people talking just outside the doorway. One of them turned to snarl, saw who it was, and shut up with gratifying suddenness. The interior of the pole barn was set up with hay bales set around 3 sides in a horseshoe-shaped proceeding, leaving the center as a stage. Bran hadn't called the whole pack, but a casual glance told Azeel that all of the wolves Azeel would have considered stable, excepting himself, were there. The Marok's pack had more than its fair share of unstable wolves. Sage was seated near the far wall, but she caught his eyes and raised her eyebrows in a "do you know what's going on?" He gravely nodded to her, though he could not conceive that his knowing anything helped her in the slightest.
The three men he'd captured were on their knees in the center of the room, with Charles standing beside them. He could hear the whispers of speculation. Apparently Bran had not told anyone what he was doing. As Azeel and Kara passed through the invisible ring imposed by Charles's impassive regard, they became the subject of attention so thick Azeel could taste it. When their audience noticed the blood on Kara's side and digested what that meant in conjunction with the strangers on their knees in disgrace, Azeel felt the pack bonds flash with the eager anger of the collected pack. Kara belonged to them, too. Kara growled when the emotion hit her, and Azeel put his hand on her head. "Shh," he said. Charles gave him a stiff nod, looked at Kara, and flinched almost imperceptibly. If Bran decided Kara must die, Azeel would have to defeat Charles before Bran in order to save Kara. And even if he managed it, that would leave him in charge not just of a pack, but of all the packs in this part of the world. Not acceptable. Azeel was done with responsibility. Kara would have to change on her own. He looked around the barn where strangers gathered. His eyes lingered on a group of wolves whose leader was staring at Kara with a little too much anger. This would be the wolf who would challenge Kara's fitness, and the unwitting tool for Hatchard Cole, who had once been Conrad Hatch. This wolf's face was familiar. Eventually his name would work its way out of Azeel's memories. Perhaps Azeel could take him out before he opened his mouth. The outer doors shut with a hollow boom, and Bran let his power flush through the building, bringing with it absolute silence. His pack, well used to his ways, knew it was a sign that the show was on. The strangers, unused to the sheer enormity of the Morrocks' effect on their wolves, were silenced by the display.
"Take a seat, please," Bran asked them simply.
The milling crowd resolved itself into an orderly audience. There were more people than the hay bales could seat. The wolves who couldn't find seating on the hay simply sat on the wooden plank floor. Even knowing that Bran did not mean him, Azeel had to lock his knees to stay upright. Kara sat, then leaned harder against his leg as she craned her neck to look at Bran as he walked soberly into the center of the room, facing his audience.
"Today I come before you to render justice," he said. "For this reason I have asked you and your candidates to gather here today, so that those who wish to be wolves can see what that truly means. These gentlemen were found hunting as wolves in my territory without my permission."
He paused to let them think about that, leaving the silence for exactly long enough. Bran's timing was almost as good as Azeel's.
"The penalty for hunting without invitation upon my lands is one thing," he said. "That their prey was one of mine upon my lands is another."
He strolled past the three kneeling men without looking at them. He turned, like any good actor, into the audience rather than away from them. He took time to let his eyes meet, however briefly, the gaze of all the wolves in the room. Azeel watched Bran's attention drive the eyes of everyone, human or not, to the ground. The effect was almost eerie. Then he turned his focus to the trespassers.
"Eric," he said, "were you under orders?"
The werewolf addressed bit his lip until it bled in an effort not to speak.
"Eric?"
Bran's voice was gentle, but that didn't mean it wasn't compelling.
"Yes." "Cole's orders?"
Eric's skin flushed down his cheekbones as he ground his teeth.
"Yes."
"Hatchard Cole is their alpha," Bran said. "He chose to stay in Alaska and sent these three with Eric's brother, who is a candidate."
He paused.
"Eric's wife is in Alaska under the protection of Hatchard Cole."
Azeel did not point out that, hostage or not, Eric had been quite willing to hunt down a 13-year-old girl and hurt her. He was pretty certain that if he had not hurt her, Kara would have been hurt worse, even if they had not killed her. But he trusted Bran. Really, the bastard wouldn't get away with anything. Eric opened his mouth to say something, but Bran beat him to it.
He was sent here originally to tell me that Cole is taking over all of Alaska and I could give my permission or he'd just take it. When Cole wasn't happy with my reply, he told his wolves to make trouble.
Bran smiled. What he doesn't know is that there are 8 packs in Alaska, not 3.
He checked his watch.
Excuse me, what he did not know until right about now is that there are 8 packs in Alaska.
It is a big state. Silver Pete and the rest of the Alphas are reminding him that he is due so much of it and no more.
No one said a word, but Azeel could feel the frisson of excitement travel through the barn. Silver Pete might not be as big a legend as Azeel himself was, but his name was still known. He was also supposed to have died 100 years ago.
Bran tilted his head and listened to the electric silence. He breathed in and out, twice. When he spoke, his voice dropped into a husky bass. The way the audience flinched back, Azeel was pretty sure that he'd let his wolf out enough they could see it in his eyes.
If Azeel had not stopped these idiots before they hurt Kara worse, I would have killed these men and Cole as well. I owe it to Azeel that I have options.
He took a step back and turned subtly, focusing the attention back upon the werewolves Azeel had brought here.
I think these men need a change of pack. His voice was thoughtful.
He switched from addressing the audience to the men on their knees.
We'll keep you here a month or so to explain proper manners. Then I'll move you someplace suitable. Your brother Eric, I think, should wait until next year before he seeks to be changed. If he still would like to change, when tempers are cooler, he may ask again. I need not tell you that if you attempt to change him on your own, your life is forfeit,
and I will know. Eric jerked his head up to Bran's, then quickly away. The men with him just shrank. Azeel enjoyed the scent of fear that rose in the air. Knowing that Bran could talk in your head was a completely different thing than having him do it.
Bran nodded at Charles. Charles looked at the prisoners and smiled. Azeel had practiced in a mirror trying to get that smile.
His own were very good, but he hadn't gotten quite the same, I'd rather rip you to little pieces but my father says I can't, yet, effect. Azeel was better at the I'm crazy and you are about to die.
Up, Charles told them.
Then he pointed to the door and followed them out. Bran waited until the door closed behind him.
I have sent him away. This is between us, old wolf.
Bran's voice was a somber thread in his head. No one else reacted, so Azeel assumed that Bran talked to him alone.
I cannot break my own laws, not when my friends are killing their wives, their children and grandchildren for the good of all.
Can you give her a chance? Azeel asked aloud. Let her try.
Drawing this out will do nothing but make it harder.
The other wolves had begun to murmur as Bran's failure to dismiss them implied that there was more business at hand than they'd seen so far. Kara was starting to get worried. She looked at Azeel and whined. He put a hand on her head, and tension in the room began to climb. Some of them might know what this was about. But Azeel's gesture told them that there was a disagreement between Azeel and the Marok, and it involved Kara. The Marok's pack, at least, would know what this might mean.
Let me help, Azeel said.
The wolf who had been staring at Kara before Bran came into the pole barn came to his feet. Last year, on the 20th of October, I killed my mate. For 30 years she was my wife. She asked to be changed. And after a year as a wolf, she could not shift from one form to another without my help.
He didn't say anything more, nor did he have to.
A second wolf stood up.
3 children, he said. 3 children of 4 I killed. One died a week after the change because he was uncontrollably violent, and not even the Marok could help. I killed him before Bran was forced to. One I killed when he attacked his human family. One I killed on his anniversary date, because he could not control his shift.
Kara stared at the standing men and began to shake. A third wolf stood up. This one Azeel knew. The Alpha of the Emerald City Pack was not a big man, but he didn't need to be.
The laws are right, Bran Cornick. This is why we have always supported you.
He bowed his head, and Azeel could tell that what he said hurt him.
13 is not fair. We all know that. But fair is not an option when you are a werewolf. We cannot afford to ignore the laws that have allowed us to survive. You and I both remember different times, Bran. I do not want a return of those old times. Justice for us cannot contain mercy, because we cannot afford it.
These werewolves were honest, and as much as Azeel hated to admit it, they had reason behind what they said. He could not take out his rage on them. But Hatchard Cole, Azeel thought very carefully to his wolf, is a dead man. The wolf's agreement spread to his chest in a warm wave of rage.
It has always been acceptable, Azeel said clearly, for wolves to receive such aid that does not involve pack bonds or magic in order to pass the test.
Neither he nor Bran could call her wolf out of her, nor could they change themselves and hope to call her change.
Yes, agreed Bran.
I'll be right back, Azeel said. He bent down and whispered into her ear. Bran heard him, but that didn't matter so much.
Louder, he told her, stay here, I'll be right back.
He started out of the room, and the first wolf who'd stood up said,
so we all wait on you?
Azeel turned and looked at him. His wolf looked too, and his wolf thought that maybe they'd hunt someone before they tracked down Hatchard Cole. Being a dupe was one thing. Eagerness for the death of a child was something entirely different.
You are so anxious to kill her that you cannot wait 10 minutes?
He didn't bother saying anything else, just turned on his heel and strode out of the door. Sick at heart, he trotted through the snow to the Maroc's house. She would fail. He would fight the Maroc, but he knew how that would end. And then the Maroc would kill her. All of them would pay, because Hatchard Cole was greedy.
Unacceptable, he said aloud.
He took a deep breath. She was almost there. Another week, maybe only another day or two, and she would make it. But they did not have that time. All he could give her was a fighting chance. Inside the house, he went right to Bran's study. The roses he'd brought were still in good shape, though the big black-red rose was starting to droop. That was the one he pulled out of the vase. One would work better than all of them.
Do not fail me, he told it sternly.
Roses are good, said Devon.
Azeel, not used to being startled, let out an involuntary snarl, then swallowed it. Devon stood in his human body. Every rib showed, and his muscles were stringy, almost like a very old man's. He was shivering with nervous energy, and his eyes shifted back and forth between brown and gold every time he blinked.
I didn't see you here, Azeel said after a moment when Devon didn't say anything.
The rose will help her, Devon told him, especially if she believes what you told her.
Devon hadn't been in the pole barn when he'd whispered to Kara.
Belief, said Devon, is the most powerful magic of all.
Yes, agreed Azeel.
It was hard to recognize his old friend in this too gaunt and nervous stranger.
So I hope. But music is what really helps me, Devon told him. When I have a bad day, I go to the greenhouse. When I have a very bad day, I come here and Bran plays for me.
Music? Asked Azeel, startled.
You had that one song you used to play.
Bran had musical instruments scattered all over the house. An acoustic guitar was balanced on a floor stand. Devon picked it up and held it out in a hand that vibrated with his tension.
Do you remember? To make your roses grow. She is so scared. She needs you to help her grow.
It wasn't on a guitar like this.
Azeel knew which song he meant.
And a child is not a rose to flower with music.
But Azeel took the guitar anyway. He could play guitar, even if it had been a while. He was pretty sure he could even manage to work out that old song on this modern descendant of the guitarra morisca he'd originally composed it on.
That song, Devin said urgently, hugging his now empty hands against himself. You play that one.
All right, mi amigo.
Devin looked down.
I have to change back.
He closed his eyes.
She smells like Frida, he said. Don't you think?
Frida liked that song.
She is very like, said Azil,
who did not remember what Devon's long-ago daughter had smelled like. But he did remember a pretty little thing who had been fond of roses and moved like a colt. Kara had that same awkward gracefulness, too. Frida had lived to be a grandmother and died centuries ago. The change took Devin again, slowly swallowing Azil's old friend in the protective skin of the wolf. He did not expect that they would converse again in this lifetime. He let the old wolf change in peace and left, rose in one hand and guitar in the other, to do battle with fate. The pole barn was silent when he returned. The wolves who had been standing were seated. Charles was back and gave him a look that told Azil that the Maroc son had realized that his father had sent him away to give Azil a chance to fight Bran without interference. Bran looked at his guitar in Azil's hand.
Yes, I know, Azil said. Your guitar. Also, you play it better than I do. But I promised Devin I would play her a song for him.
He looked at Kara, who was lying in a miserable heap at Bran's feet.
He told me that music helped him.
He crouched, ignoring the other people's reactions.
Devin has not taken human form in my presence for 100 years, he told her. He did tonight, because he is worried about you. He thought it would help if I play a song I played to his daughter a long time ago.
He put the rose on the ground in front of her.
I want you to close your eyes, smell the rose, remember what I told you. Listen to the music, and let Kara come out to play.
She gave him a long look. He let her hold his gaze and said simply,
Trust me.
She put her nose on the flower and took a deep breath. There was a wave of sound from the assembled werewolves, and Azil looked up, irritated. But he lost his irritation when Devin came into the barn, all the way wolf now. He tipped his head so he didn't look at anyone as he trotted over to Kara and dropped a blanket on top of her. He looked up to Bran without meeting his alpha's gaze, let his eyes trail over Charles, then Azil.
Thank you, Azil murmured, spreading the blanket over Kara.
Devin had realized that a young girl would not be comfortable being naked in front of a room filled with werewolves, most of whom were men. It had been a long time since Azil had experienced a shred of modesty. Devin ducked his head, hesitated, then licked Kara's face. Then he turned and trotted out of the building, not quite running away. Azil sat on the ground beside Kara and strummed the guitar. He looked at Bran.
It's out of tune.
You are wasting time, said the wolf who had had to kill his wife. You're just making it harder on her.
I said silence. Bran's voice didn't have to be loud to be effective.
To Azil, Bran said,
New strings. They take a while to break in.
Azil tuned the high E string until he was pleased with it. He played a little of this and that, letting his fingers learn the spacing of Bran's guitar. The one he usually played had a slightly narrower neck. He slid into the song a few chords at a time, his fingers finding the notes that his heart knew. He played the chorus twice before he sang the first verse. It was a very long and silly song, more about the sound of the words than the meaning. Each verse a medley of compliments that sounded like they were addressed to a woman, but the chorus made it clear that it was addressed to a flower instead. He glanced around the room. He could see the people who understood Spanish, because even under the serious circumstance, they started to grin. Kara didn't, as far as he knew, speak Spanish, but under the blanket, she'd quit shivering. When he finished the chorus, he sang the first verse in English, translating on the fly. When he couldn't find a word fast enough, he used the Spanish word and kept going. It worked, adding humor. On the second verse, Bran joined him.
Sometimes Bran found a different English word than Azeel did. Sometimes it was a better one. Just before they started the second chorus, Azeel leaned down and said,
"Now, chica, try now."
He didn't put any particular force in his voice, nothing any of their watchers could object to. If there was power in his words, it was only the power of hope. Kara sighed and began to change. Azeel was unashamed when a tear slid down his face. When she could speak, Kara said,
"It was a magical rose, like you said."
Bran's eyebrows shot up, and several of the wolves in the audience came to their feet at her words. Azeel lifted a haughty brow.
"There is magic in a rose in winter," he told them, "if only because it is a rose in winter."
He smiled at Kara.
"But that change you accomplished yourself."
A few weeks later, Azeel answered a knock on his greenhouse door.
"Bran," he said, "how nice to see you."
Bran folded his arms and looked at Azeel without making any attempt to come inside.
"You've been gone for a few days."
Azeel smiled. He stepped outside and closed the door to keep the cold from getting inside.
"I'm flattered that you noticed."
"Hatchard Cole's second called me this morning. Seems Hatchard disappeared. No sign of struggle, no sign of anything. He just vanished."
Azeel's wolf slid out and looked at their alpha.
"Odd," Azeel said, knowing the wolf was in his voice,
knowing that Bran would hear the satisfaction he did not bother to hide.
"I remember," Bran said softly. "There was an alpha in Spain who was a very bad man 200 years ago. He hurt a lot of people. And then one day his second went to that alpha's home, and his alpha was just gone. No sign of struggle, no scent of strangers, nothing. No one ever heard of him again."
Azeel shrugged.
"Someday you aren't going to come back from a kill," Bran said intently.
"Some risks are worth taking," Azeel told him. "Did you hear that Kara's dad is bringing her mom to visit?"
Bran's face gentled.
"Yes, I heard. Kara told me, too."
In Red with Pearls. When I received the invitation to do a private detective story for the George R. R. Martin Gardner Dozois anthology Down These Strange Streets, Warren had just started to work for his boyfriend Kyle as a private detective. Of course, the story had to be Warren's. Because I write the Mercy books from Mercy's point of view, her impressions of people are all that I can show. To Mercy, Warren seems to be the least intimidating of the werewolves. This is largely because they are friends, but partially because she sees him as a kind, caring, and gentle man, which he is. But he is also a very dominant and gay werewolf who has survived more than a century when most gay werewolves do not. My werewolves are still, for the most part, caught in the mores of 100 years ago. Warren is bone-deep, tough, and practical, and here, for the first time, he gets to tell the story. The events of In Red with Pearls happen between Silverborn and River Marked.
"I'm real good at waiting. I reckon it's all the time I spent herding cows when I was a boy. Kyle says it's the werewolf in me, that predators have to be patient. But Kyle knows squat about herding cows. I'd say he knows squat about predators, too, but he's a lawyer. I stretched out my legs and put the heels of my boots on the desk of Angelina the receptionist and dictator of all things proper at Brooks, Gordon, and Howe, attorneys at law. Angelina would have thrown a fit if she'd seen my feet propped up where anyone could just walk in and see me.
M.I.G. Hall,
she said to me when I started working for the firm. I kind of liked it when she called me Iho. Though I was a lot older than any son of hers could possibly be, she didn't know that. She'd given me a disapproving look.
It is all about the image. Your appearance must be just so to get the clients to spend their money, Warren. They like expensive offices, lawyers in suits, and private detectives in fedoras and ties. It tells them that we are successful, that we have the skills to help them.
I told her I'd wear a fedora when the cows came home wearing muumuus and feather boas. I consented, however, to wearing ties to work and to playing nicely during office hours, and she was mostly happy with that. Office hours had been officially over for a good while. The tie was in my back pocket, and Angelina was gone for the day. I'd have been gone for the day, too, but one of Kyle's clients had come bursting in all upset, and he'd taken her into his office and was talking her down. Kyle was usually the last one out of the office. This time, it was a sobbing client who suddenly decided that the jerk who'd slept with her best friend was actually the love of her life, and she didn't really want to divorce him, just teach him a lesson. Tomorrow would be a mound of paperwork that would only take him a few minutes to straighten up, and a few minutes would stretch into a few hours. He tended toward workaholism. I didn't mind. Kyle was worth waiting a bit for. And, like I said, I'm pretty good at waiting anyhow. A noise out in the hall had me pulling my feet off the desk just before the outer door opened, and a young woman in a sleek red dress with a big string of pearls around her throat entered the office in a wave of Chanel No. 5. She was stunning.
"Hey,"
she said with a big smile and a dark, breathy voice.
"Are you Kyle Brooks?"
Her ears had pearls in them, too. Her hands were bare, though I could see that she'd recently been wearing a wedding ring. Dating a divorce attorney makes me notice things like that. "No, ma'am," I told her. "After hours here, best you try 'em tomorrow." She leaned over Angelina's desk, and the low-cut dress did what sleek little dresses are built to do in such circumstances. If I ran that way, I might have counted it a treat for the eyes.
"I have to find Kyle Brooks."
She was close enough that the feel of her breath brushed my face, mostly mint toothpaste. Mostly. "Well now," I said, standing up slowly and sauntering around the desk as if I found her all sorts of interesting, which I all of a sudden surely did. "Just what do you want with Kyle, darling?" Her smile died and she looked worried.
"I have to find him. I have to. Can you help me?"
Kyle's office was down the hall and in the back. I could hear the woman he was with talking at him as she had been for the past half hour. "Think I can," I said, and led her the opposite direction to the big conference room at the other end of the offices. "Stay right here for a couple of minutes," I told her. "He'll be right in." She'd followed me docilely and stopped where I told her to. I shut the door on her and hightailed it back to Kyle's office. I opened the door without knocking and ignored Kyle's frown. "Would you do me a favor?" I asked, tossing him my cell phone. "Call Elisaveta. Her number is under W." Under which? He'd figure it out. He was a smart man. "Tell her we have an incident, her kind of incident, we'd like some help with. Excuse me, ma'am." I tipped my non-existent hat to his indignant client before turning back to Kyle. "Might be the kind of thing we should clear the offices for." "Your kind of thing?" Kyle asked obliquely. Something supernatural, he meant. "That's right." I ducked out of his office and ran back to the conference room.
1:17,
the beautiful woman was saying when I rejoined her. She stopped counting when the door opened, her body tense. When she saw me, she frowned.
"I need it, Kyle," she said.
"I know you do," I told her. "He'll be right here." Hopefully not until after he got his client out safely and called Elisaveta Arkadyevna, my Wolfpack's contractual witch. I heard the front door of the office close and thought that I should have done something to make Kyle leave, too. But I hadn't known how long our guest would have stayed put. Probably exactly a couple of minutes from the sounds of it. Not enough time to get Kyle to do anything except call Elisaveta, which he'd done because I heard Elisaveta's cranky voice. My cell phone distorted it just enough that with the door between us, I couldn't tell what she was saying. I wasn't the only one who heard it. The zombie turned its head to the door. My first clue about what the woman was had been that her breath had come out smelling fresh and oxygen-rich instead of dulled like someone's who was really breathing would have. A vampire's did the same thing, but she didn't smell like a vampire, not even under the rich scent of the Chanel. The second was the way she'd obeyed what I'd told her. Zombies are supposed to be really cooperative as long as what you tell them doesn't contradict what their master tells them to do. Yes, Kyle said from the hallway, closing in on the conference room. This is Kyle Brooks. We're at my offices. Fine, thank you. The door popped open. What's... The zombie launched itself at him. I knew it was going to do it as soon as Kyle named himself. I was ready when he opened the door. I'm damned fast, and I thought I had a handle on it, but that thing was faster than I thought it would be. I grabbed its shoulders and yanked it back so it missed its target. Instead of nailing Kyle's throat, it latched onto his collarbone. Shit! He cried out, jerking back. Stay still! I told him sharply, and he froze, his eyes on me and not on the zombie gnawing on him. I don't often use that tone of voice on anyone, and I hadn't been sure it would work on a human. But if he tried to pull himself away, he was just going to do more damage to himself. I tried not to think about the blood staining his shirt because I didn't know if the witch needed the zombie still up and moving to tell who sent it after Kyle. And I was damn sure going to get whoever had sent it after Kyle. If I couldn't tear the zombie apart, I had to avoid looking at Kyle's blood. He helped. He didn't look like a man in pain. He looked thoroughly ticked. Get her off, he gritted while trying to do it himself. He may be slightly built, but he's tough, is Kyle. But it had locked its jaw good and tight, and Kyle couldn't budge it. I'd always assumed that taking on a zombie would pretty much be like fighting a human, one that was relentless and didn't react to pain, but basically a human. When it moved on Kyle, it was moving a lot faster than I'd seen any mundane human move, and now it was proving stronger, too. It didn't so much try to get away from me as it did to get to Kyle. I'd have thought that would make it easier to subdue. Finally, I got an arm wrapped all the way around its shoulders, pulling it tight against me. Then I could put my other hand to work on prying her teeth apart. Its teeth. Its jaw broke in the process, and I got my thumb gnawed on a little. Kyle staggered back, white to the bone, but he stripped off his shirt and wadded it against the hole she'd dug in him. "What is she?" he asked. "Why isn't she bleeding more?" He was looking at it in quick glances. I understood. It wasn't pretty anymore with its jaw hanging half off. Zombie, I told him a little breathlessly. It was now trying to get away from me, and that did make things a bit more difficult, but at least I wasn't trying to pry it off Kyle. Your business, then? He said. Usually I'd agree. Not even shark-sharp lawyers like Kyle were so exotic as to call for assassination by zombie. It was too flamboyant, too blatant. The witches and supernatural priest types who could create zombies had never been hidden the way the werewolves used to be. But they lived among the psychics, Wiccans, and New Agers where the con artists and the self-deluded provided ample cover for a few real magic practitioners. They didn't give up that cover lightly. Somebody would have had to have paid a lot for a zombie assassination. I shook my head. Don't know. Seems awfully set on you either way. The zombie hadn't managed to get a limb free for the past few seconds, so I chanced turning my attention to Kyle. His wound worried me. You get out Howard's good malt, I told him. He keeps the key behind the third book on the top left shelf. Clean that wound out with it. It's liable to have all sorts of stuff in its mouth. I didn't know much about zombies, but I knew about the Komodo dragon, which doesn't need poison to kill its prey because the bacteria in its mouth do the job just fine. Kyle didn't argue and took himself out of the conference room. As soon as he was out of sight, the zombie started crying out something, Might have been Kyle's name, but it was hard to tell, what with its jaw so badly mangled. I held on to it. By now, I'd gotten a hold that prevented it from hitting me effectively or wiggling loose. That gave me the leisure to be concerned with other things. Kyle had shut the door gently behind him. I tried not to speculate about Kyle's reaction, tried to wrap up the panic and bury it where it could do no harm. He'd seen weird things before, even if none of them had drawn blood. I could have destroyed the zombie and left it in the conference room for later retrieval with no one the wiser. Could have hidden all of this from my lover as I used to do. But it had been different with Kyle from the beginning. The lies I'd told him about who and what I was, lies that necessity dictated and time had made familiar, had tasted foul on my tongue when spoken to him. Now he knew my truths, and I wouldn't hide from him again. If he couldn't live with who and what I was, so be it. But none of that was useful, so I forced my attention to the matter at hand. Who would send a zombie to kill Kyle? Was it something directed at me? The zombie was pretty strong evidence that it was someone from my world of the things that live in the dark corners and not Kyle's. He was as human as it got. Still, I couldn't think of anyone I'd offended so much that I'd made Kyle into a target. Nor, with the possible exception of Elisabetta herself, who was, as Winston Churchill said of her mother Russia, a riddle wrapped in a mystery inside an enigma, could I think of who could even create a zombie in the Tri-Cities. Eastern Washington State was not a hotbed of hoodoo or voodoo. Maybe someone had hired it done. Hired an assassin, and the assassin had chosen the manner of death? Kyle had a lot more enemies than I did. When he chose to use it, his special gift was to make the opposing parties in a courtroom look either like violent criminals or like complete idiots, and sometimes both. Some of them had quite a bit of money, enough to hire a killer, certainly. Maybe it wasn't my fault. A zombie hit, though, screamed expensive, a lot more expensive than someone like Kyle would normally command, which meant it was probably my fault. I heard Elisabetta arrive and stride down the hall to the conference room. The lack of talking led me to believe that Kyle was still cleaning up. Elisabetta opened the conference room door and entered like the Queen Mary coming to port in a wave of herbs and menthol instead of salt water, but with the same regal dominance, a regality accompanied by enough fabric and colors to do justice to a gypsy in midwinter, and it was hotter than sin outside. I'd always thought that she must have been beautiful when she was young. Not a conventional beauty, something much more powerful than that. Now her nose looked hawkish and her eyes were too hard, but the power was still there.
"Warren, my little cinnamon bun, what have you found?"
She never spoke to me in Russian as she did Adam, who understood it. Instead, she translated the endearments that peppered her speech, probably because they made me squirm. Why would you compare a grown man to a sweet roll? I responded to her overblown presentation as I usually did, dipping down into my childhood accent, added to a bit by Hollywood Westerns. I reckon it's a zombie, ma'am, but I thought you ought to take a good look first. She smiled.
What was it doing when you found it?
It found me, ma'am, looking for Kyle.
And you relocated its jaw for that, my little Texas bunny?
She asked archly. No, said Kyle from the doorway. His spare shirt hung over his shoulders, folded back to avoid possible contact with the blood from the liberally splattered towel he held to his collarbone. He smelled like whiskey, but not even a zombie attack could make him unpretty or completely destroy his composure. He broke her jaw when he pulled her off me. You must be Elisabetta Arkadyevna Vishnevetskaya. I'm Kyle Brooks. She looked down at him. She is damn near as tall as I am. Her face was turned away from me, but Kyle had his lawyer face on, so I doubted her expression was friendly. The zombie's noises increased, and so did its struggles. The witch turned to look at it without addressing Kyle.
Quit plank and kill it,
she told me coolly.
Breaking its neck should be enough.
She'd never been happy with bringing humans into things she'd rather they be ignorant of. I guess she was trying to teach him and me a lesson. I didn't like playing her game, but if she didn't need the zombie running around, Kyle would be safer with it dead. More dead. I didn't look at Kyle when I popped the thing's neck. Its spine broke easily under my hand, which was what she'd wanted Kyle to see. I laid the limp body down on the conference table as carefully as I could, pulling the dress down over the dead woman's thighs. Elisabetta turned her attention to the corpse, and I finally noticed that she wasn't alone. Nadia's gift was blending in. Some of that was magic. I'd been occupied with the zombie, Kyle, and Elisabetta, but I still should have noticed her. Nadia, I said, thank you for coming. Of all Elisabetta's numerous family, I liked Nadia the best. She was quiet, competent, and smart. She also was, I understood, one of the three family who were honest apprentices rather than dog's bodies who did Elisabetta's bidding. The old woman's grandson, who was supposed to inherit the family business, had been found to be jump-starting his career in a manner Elisabetta found embarrassing. He'd quietly disappeared. I figure in a few hundred years someone would discover his remains in a jar in Elisabetta's basement. I'd shed no tears for him. He'd conspired to murder Bran Cornick, the Marok, who ruled the wolves in this part of the world. The man who made being a werewolf less of a nightmare than it might have been. Elisabetta was still mad at Bran for outing the wolves. I'd always secretly wondered if she'd been a part of that mess, too, if only by being complicit. Nadia lifted a pair of deep gray eyes to mine and smiled at me, light crow's feet dispelling the illusion of youth that her fine-pored skin and gray-free, seal-brown hair gave her. But the appearance of youth was no great loss because her smile was big and sweet.
Warren,
she said. She'd been born in the Tri-Cities, and not a hint of Russian accent touched her voice.
You look...
dressed up, I said, looking down at my slacks. I'm working for Kyle's firm, and they are a bit upscale. I got to keep the boots, though, as long as I remember to polish them once in a while. She flushed a little.
I didn't mean to be rude, sorry. I didn't know you were a lawyer.
Nah, I told her. Kyle's the lawyer. I introduced her to him. She took the hand he held out and murmured her greeting. I'm the gopher, I told her, answering the question she hadn't gotten around to yet.
Private detective,
corrected Kyle. Ink so new it might smear, I told Nadia's raised eyebrows.
Niece, quit flirting with the men and tell me what you see,
said Elisabetta sharply, without looking up. Nadia blushed, not because she'd been flirting, but because her great aunt had embarrassed her, and turned her attention to the body on the table. After a steadying breath, she was all business.
I know her face,
she said in some surprise.
This woman has been in the papers. She disappeared when the... out for a jog last Saturday morning. I don't remember her name.
Tony McFetters, said Kyle. You're right. I didn't recognize her before.
Not unexpected under the circumstances.
Nadia was clearly paying more attention to the dead body than she was to any of us. Her voice was clinical.
Easiest way to get a corpse to raise is to kill her yourself.
Are you saying that she was killed just for this? Kyle looked cool and composed, but I could smell his agitation.
Probably,
said Nadia when her great aunt didn't say anything.
This kind of magic works best on a fresh corpse. Hopeless to try it with one a mortuary is filled with embalming fluid, and stealing a body from a hospital morgue is tough. Too many people at a hospital.
She glanced over her shoulder, saw Kyle, and clearly, from the consternation on her face, ran the past few minutes of conversation through her head.
I'm so sorry. I'm not used to discussing my work with a layman. I do know this is difficult for you. Whoever did